Hello, welcome to our Galaxy Zoo Hangout podcast. Before we start this time, I just wanted to preface this by saying that Google Plus was having a few issues during this Hangout, and so it didn't actually start recording or live broadcasting for a few minutes, so I thought I'd let you know what we talked about in the beginning. We were talking about the Space Warps project, which is a new project from the Zooniverse looking at gravitational lenses, so this podcast is essentially just talking all about what gravitational lenses are. For which purpose we invited on our special guests, Aparajita Verma and Phil Marshall, who are both on the science team, co-PIs of Space Warps. And we began actually by talking about one of the very first gravitational lenses, which happened to be imaged in, I think it was 1903. And we're going to come into this podcast with Bill Keel talking about what that image looked like and what it meant, and then Phil and Aparajita will tell us what a gravitational lens is. So thanks for listening.
Until about 1980. There were earlier pictures because it happens to lie close in the sky to the bright spiral galaxy NGC 3079, which makes it way easier to find this than it might otherwise be. So it happened to show up in the corner of some pictures back in 1903 and 1950. So you could actually go back and measure how bright the two lensed images had been then to help establish a baseline. Nobody would have known what to make of it until about 12 years later when Einstein first started working on the gravitational deflection of light and general relativity. And then it was well into the 1930s before there was even the theoretical understanding that under particular rare astronomical circumstances, you could see the same object more than once or distorted and net brightened. And then in 1937, Fritz Zwicky took that information from Einstein's paper and wrote a one-page paper in the journal Science in which he laid out all the reasons that gravitational lenses are interesting. You can learn about mass distributions. You can find things by mass without light. You can extend the range of your largest telescopes. You can use large masses, as he wrote about it, galaxies, to see fainter objects in more detail in them than you could with whatever the largest extant telescopes are at a particular time. And this has now turned not just from a curiosity, but to a serious tool in astrophysics.
So I've noticed, as you've been talking, Bill, that now several of us have started sharing different objects that are examples of these gravitational lenses that the Space Warps project is looking at. And now there's four or five of us, which leaves Phil and Aparajita to tell us, what do you see? Can you expand on what Phil was saying? What exactly are these things that we're looking at?
I'll have to find a better lens to put up for them, too.
Okay.
Well, I've seen this one that Brooke showed before. We've seen that in the zoo, Aparajita. So this was spotted by a number of people in the Galaxy Zoo. I think this is a Candles image, is it?
It is.
But actually, this was first noticed in the CFHTLS survey, which is the one that we're looking at the moment in Space Warps. There, the images are taken from the ground with the Canada France telescope. And this lens looks a little bit different in those images, but I recognize that great big red arc and the other elongated features around it. They're also lensed as well. It's a good one, this. 0217, it's called.
So if I remember this correctly, I was looking at the paper for this one, and the paper says that. So this right here, this arc, this big one, is twinned with this little guy right here, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And they're both galaxy. They're a single galaxy at redshift like 1.8 or something. Mm-hmm. And then this galaxy here, I think, is also a lens. Is that correct?
It's been lensed, yeah.
Been lensed. Yes, actually, yes. You should make definitely sure that I'm clear on my jargon. I don't want to use the jargon incorrectly because I am not a gravitational lens expert the way you do.
Actually, before we go any further, Aparajita, do you want to clear this up for everybody?
Yeah, sure. So basically, if you take away this red arc and the little dot that's on the opposite side and that other elongated feature, you just get left with this kind of really bright, centrally dominated yellow galaxy, and that's a massive galaxy. And what you need to do is kind of imagine it without those features, and these galaxies are actually lying behind that yellow galaxy, and the only reason that they pop out in the images is because they're being gravitationally lensed, and they basically, the light from the background galaxy is being kind of stretched around or deflected around this yellow galaxy that's lying between us and them. And that's what gives rise to these really quite spectacular features. So you see this gorgeous red arc, and basically, well, Phil can demonstrate perhaps shortly why you see it in those kind of morphologies. So arcs are quite typical when you see lensed features. And the little red dot that's paired with it, as Brooke mentioned, is basically you can kind of draw a circle that would complete that arc and pass through that little companion red blob on the other side. So you can just imagine these kind of circles around that central galaxy.
Now, they don't have to be circles, right?
They don't have to be circles, but the images can be lie.
So, and they're also, they're distorted, right, as well? So you see these little arcs that are distorted images of the galaxy, but they're also magnified.
Yeah, so basically if normally, it depends on the magnification, but these galaxies that you're seeing typically wouldn't have been picked up in a normal or in a similarly sensitive survey. So the lens actually boosts the light so you can start to detect them. So say you had an unlensed version of that galaxy, of the background galaxy somewhere else in the field, it would be so faint that you couldn't really do really good astrophysical tests with it. But the fact that they've been magnified and also distorted and stretched, like mentioned, means you can detect them, but you can also look at a lot more detail, because if you imagine that huge red arc that you actually see is something incredibly small lying behind the yellow galaxy. So it's actually stretching out all the light and magnifying it. And then you can actually look at individual regions within these background galaxies that you couldn't do if it hadn't been lensed.
Yeah. So I see Bill is showing an example here with some different images of what happens when you pass a gravitational lens in front of a galaxy whose image you recognize. But actually, there's an easier demo that people can do themselves, right?
Yeah, okay, so Bill, we don't expect to see any lenses that look like that. So what Bill was doing, he was showing a little model of something like a black hole, right? Because you couldn't see any lens there, right? There was just a hole where it was
right,
was it? And so, you know, that's the kind of thing you might see if there was a rogue black hole that flew across in front of a huge, well-resolved galaxy that was very nearby. But we don't expect that to happen almost at all. So most of the lenses we're looking for, you see the lens. So the lens galaxy is the massive yellow elliptical galaxy that Abrajita points out. That's the lens. It's doing the lensing. It's causing the light to deflect around it. And then the thing in the background is a light source. That's the lensed galaxy. The thing that has been lensed by the lens. And we, like I say, we expect to be able to see all the lenses. They're going to be bright yellow or orange or red massive galaxies.
So can you show us sort of geometrically what's going on in a lens?
So I think Karen had a good example. Maybe it was Kyle. One of you had a quad lens.
Oh, yes. Karen had the cross up, right?
Yeah.
Do you think you can reproduce that with some simple...
Yeah, so just like Bill had a little model black hole that he was moving across in front of that galaxy, we can make a model lens out of one of these.
A wine glass.
Wine glass, yeah. So you might have seen me do this in a video on the web. It's certainly out there. So
I'll put the link to that at the end of the blog post when I write that up. But do it again here because it's a great demo.
Okay, good. But let's look at Karen's picture.
Hello, this is my picture, which is Hooker's lens or the Einstein cross.
Yeah. The viewers will be seeing it big right now because I'm focusing on it. So go ahead.
Okay.
All right, so Phil, can you remake that?
Yes, okay. So here's my... Actually, it's Kyle's.
Actually, it's Brooks.
Here's a little model quasar. Can you all see that? Like being a dentist, I suppose. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to put the model lens in front of it, like this, okay? So there's the wine glass. And we're going to use the base of the wine glass.
Getting there. You definitely see some stuff happening. You see two images, three images. Oh, look! I've got a cross!
Yeah.
But so...
It's quite hard to do.
But this is showing it takes a particular configuration, right, to make this cross.
Yeah.
It takes a very specific thing. And so then what do you do with these images once you have them? Because we're asking the public's help. We go to spacewarps.org and we're asking the public's help to find these things. And then what happens? First of all, how often do you expect to find these things?
Not very often. In a big sky survey, there should be a fair few. But they're still very rare. So most of the images you see on spacewarps probably won't contain lenses unless we put them there as simulated lenses.
Why would you do that?
Why would we do that? We would do that mainly to give you a better idea of what lenses look like. Every time you see a simulated lens on spacewarps, you learn a little bit about what can happen, what lenses can do, and it means that you'll be better prepared for when you see one for real.
Okay. Now, I admit, I've been on the site, I spent some time yesterday on the site. I tend to try all the new projects. I did about 30 or 40. They're really fast and easy and fun. And it sometimes told me, when I'd look through the images, and I'd go, I don't think there's a lens here, you know, and I'd go, well, next, and just not have tagged a lens, and it would be like, correct, there's no lens here. So how do you know that, and why do you ask us that?
Well, okay, so... One of the things we've spent a lot of time doing is looking at images. So a few weeks before the survey started, Annaprita Morey, who couldn't be with us today, but she's the one who's prepared all the data, she made a set of about 600 images and asked us to look at them to see if we could see any lenses. And so we looked as careful as we could, and we selected 450 that didn't contain lenses. And so we then define those as our duds. And duds are, they're as important as the simulation, right?
Yeah, for sure. Especially considering most of the fields you're going to see won't have lenses in. And it's kind of very tricky as well to kind of see things that are kind of aligned and kind of look like a lens and not really know whether you should clip them or not. And these duds kind of reinforce, you know, when you see an image and you don't think there's something in there, at least you get a confirmation on some of the things that you're looking at that they really are empty. And that's just as valuable as knowing that there is a lens or a simulated lens within the frame you're looking at.
Yeah. In fact, you can think of every image on spacewarps contains a discovery. Either we'll discover that it contains a lens, or we'll discover that it doesn't contain a lens.
Okay. I like that thought.
Do all of the images like that until there are none left.
So, okay. So I don't know how many of our viewers have actually tried this, but I thought that it would be interesting to take us through it. So what if we tried a bit of space warps?
Yeah, let's go.
All right.
Are you going to do that?
Yeah. Here I am. I am on space warps.
Nice.
Okay. So I'm going to try to use it, and I have done this before, so there is a tutorial I'm going to skip, basically. I'm not going to see it, I think. Okay, so you're taken to this, and there is an example of... You can all see this, right?
Yep.
Okay, there's an example of a lens right here, and if I click here, Discover Lenses, or Get Started, if I click the big blue Get Started button. Okay, now what do? I'm going to search through this, correct? And see if I see something that looks like a lens. What about this right here?
Well, Brooke, you tell us. What do you think?
Well, I think that doesn't look like a lens to me. I think that because I'm looking at the spotter's guide, and there's a bunch of little things here that are under the non-lenses category that are just sort of blue smudgy things that happen to appear right next to something. Right?
Yeah.
And so if it was a lens, there ought to be... in many cases, there's like a twin image, like we saw before, like there are two dots for a distant quasar, or this will have multiple different arcs. But this one doesn't have anything like that, right?
I guess it looks a little bit like the image that Bill showed at the start, you know,
a little bit, yeah.
But in these images, they're deep enough and they're high enough resolution that we should really see the lens. We should see the yellow light from the massive galaxy in between those two blue point sources. And we don't, so it's not a lens.
Right, so these two are not a lens together because there would be something in between, and this is not nearly big enough.
And Brooke, what have you clicked on? Like how you're able to zoom in on the image?
Right, so there's a tool, which what do you call it again, Phil?
It's
a little button here, and what it does is it allows you, you click this right here, and it allows you to explore the image. And so I can zoom in, and in my case I'm using a Mac, so I can use, it's easier if I'm actually clicking correctly. So I can use my normal scrolly tools to zoom in and look around, and I can click brighter to see a brighter version, bluer to see a bluer version, etc. And that can help spot faint lenses and things, right?
Also, that blue view was good. Can you go back to the blue view?
Yeah. What would I be looking to see, actually?
Some of our science team like the brighter view, and some of them like the bluer view. But in this case, I like the way the bluer view shows you that those two objects are different color.
Yes. And they're the same intrinsic object if it's a lens, right? So they ought to be basically different brightnesses or shapes with the same color, the same distribution of light.
Exactly, because gravitational lenses work just the same as glass lenses. The color doesn't change. You just get a different shaped image.
Okay. So I'm going to say not a lens because I don't see a lens there, and I don't really see a lens anywhere else in the image. So I'll just click next and see what I get. Now, I have to say, actually, maybe I should have started from the beginning. Because I can see here that I've done enough of these. I've done 63 of them. Not like I like lost a bunch of yesterday doing this, but they're actually very quick. But so I see fewer simulations now than I did at the beginning because the computer has a sense of how well I do or don't pick up lenses, and it's helping me learn how to pick up and not pick up lenses, and I've gotten apparently good enough to see them only 1 in 10 times.
So, for example, I apparently haven't been wasting my time. Sorry, spending my time. So I get 1 in 5 simulations. So maybe we could go through
less
on my screen.
Oh, and you have a much bigger screen, too. You can see more of it.
How do I make it bigger? How do I make
you
it?
You can do Command Plus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, right. I do not see any lenses in this image.
Okay, so hang on. Just before we go on, Aparajita was going to clarify something. We lost Karen.
We just lost Karen, but continue anyway. She'll rejoin.
So we were just going to say that actually it's not to do with your ability at simulation frequency. What it is we kind of thought as you know, you start off, you want to see more examples. And then by the time you've done 30 or so, you're less, you know, you don't need to see so many examples. And actually, you want to look at images that we've not looked at. So that frequency is kind of just declining as a function of the number of images you're looking at rather than how well you've done.
Oh, I see. Okay. So it's not necessarily that I like saw the lenses that I was supposed to see and didn't see the ones that were not there. And so it's showing me less. It's just because I've done more.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, okay.
We basically assume that everybody is roughly has roughly the same skill at spotting lenses, and that doesn't change a great deal over time. And so we just gradually reduce the number of training images so that you can spend more time focused on fresh sky.
Okay. All right, that makes sense.
You want to try again? I don't know.
Yeah, shall we? I was
crash again.
Is that what happened? It was just a screen share issue.
I got an error. Google Plus told me it had a problem.
Google Plus, I think, cut off the beginning of this broadcast as well. So it's clearly like having an issue today. That's all right.
That's okay.
We forgive you.
As I was saying, when I was so rudely interrupted, I do not believe there are any lenses in this image. So I'm just going to say next. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Also, nothing in here. I think. Yes! I succeeded! Look, I love this, that it tells me that I did it right. Mm. Okay, great.
I think Phil and Aphrodite are just really enjoying watching us do this.
I promise I have an account at the Zooniverse. I don't know why it's telling me that.
Oh, are you not signed in?
Yeah.
It's really good to hear, actually, that you like the messages coming up. Because one of our concerns was we didn't want to kind of overload people with messaging. But we strongly felt that positive feedback of any kind would be helpful. So if that's the general view, then I think we did the right thing.
I think it appeals to the part of me that likes being told I'm doing well.
Yeah.
Where the teacher says, yes, you're doing it right.
Well, one thing that we talked about for a long time, was whether we should tell people when they were going slightly wrong, if they'd missed a lens. And we discussed that for quite a while, and in the end decided that we would tell people because it's better to know. And it turns out we got some feedback that people actually quite like being told when they miss something because they want to get better at it. And so, you know, you learn a lot by making mistakes, and I think we're seeing that on Facebook. People want to know what they missed, and so they're going to their profiles and they're seeing the recent images, and they're going to go to find the one that the simulation that they missed or the dud that they missed. And then you can go to talk and you can compare notes with other people, and you know there's a way to learn after you've missed something.
So I'm on talk right now. This is our discussion tool, and this is the discussion tool that actually all the new projects get, but it's a custom one for this project. Now, one interesting thing about this one is that when I have a thing that I flag as being a lens, I think it's in my profile, right? Where is it? Where are my collections kept?
So they're down at the bottom. Underneath, you've got to scroll down.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You go to your...
Oh, there they are. All right. So I've been collecting artifacts just for fun, but I've got my candidates that are the things that I have said might have lenses in them. So, for example, should we look at this one?
Yeah, let's go.
All right.
Ooh, Brooke, that's nice.
Yeah.
So, right there, I said that's definitely got to be a lens.
Ooh, pretty.
Right? Okay. And now it says here that this is, in fact, a training image.
Yeah.
So that means that this is probably a simulated lens?
It is definitely a simulated lens. So whenever you see that label, training image, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a sim.
Okay. And
one of the things we're working on is tidying up the my candidates and the my simulations, because you have your own collection of simulations as well. There you go. Right. Got there, my simulations by Krazo Zhu. I guess yes. Poland. Krazo Zhu.
Who has no idea we're talking about them.
Yes.
That's a nice one right up there.
So this person has been shown those simulations, and they automatically get put in a list, a collection for them to go and look at later.
So this tool is one of the primary things you guys are going to do science from, right?
Yeah. And by you guys, I assume you mean every single person who comes to talk on Spacewalks.
That is what I mean. I was deliberately quite general.
Yeah. So people or you persons instead of you guys.
Oh, good point. Sorry.
Sorry. I'm half of America, and in America, guys is
I'm too colloquial, yes.
So what we hope people will do is spend time in talk having scientific discussions of the lens candidates that they find, and they'll hopefully make sense of things together. And by collecting any good candidate you see, that counts as a vote towards that system actually being a lens. So my candidates is an important collection. It's where you should keep the things that you really think are gravitational lenses. And then
okay.
The project will collect together everyone's collections, we'll combine them all together, and that'll be the final collaboration list.
Well, that's good to know, because I had one, actually, that I thought I couldn't tell whether it was a lens or whether it was just a bit of noise. And, it was very, very blue, and so it had an arc shape, but it could have been just a weird pixel artifact or something, and I wasn't really sure. So I clicked it, And then I was looking at the, you know, known lenses and false positives, and it wasn't a training image and so forth. And I eventually changed my mind, and I said, I think that's probably just noise. So I took it out of the My Candidates collection. So are you saying that that was maybe an okay thing to do? Or would you rather us not change our minds?
No, I think that's a great thing to do. I think what you'll find is that you will have several systems like that whenever you decide to kind of enough's enough or review your current candidate list. And that kind of assessment that you do yourself is really, really valuable, and it will help us trim down the total collection.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of very interesting stuff that people want to see again, and there's no harm putting them in as long as you're prepared to go through it and assess yourself how likely you think these things are then.
Okay.
So I had a really nice candidate one here, which I'm wondering if it's so nice that it must be a simulated one.
Wow. So let's mark it up.
I was thinking that maybe we could go through the process. So I think that's the only one in this image. So.
Now, do you only want to make one mark?
Oh, look.
Oh, it's simulated. You got it.
Yay. all right. I didn't discover anything too exciting yet, but I've only done 15 images, so I guess that's fair.
That's right. That's right. Only one in 15. That's not too many.
Yeah.
The question about whether you should collect something or not, it's, you know, some people like to err on the side of, you know, including everything, and other people are more discriminating. And what we say is that there's this balance between completeness and purity. High completeness means that we've detected most things that are there. Whereas high purity means that the sample of candidates that we have doesn't contain many things that are not lenses. And if you think about, you know, for us, when we have to write telescope proposals to follow up these systems, we're going to have to go through the list of candidates and decide which ones to put in our proposal. And so at that point, it's really good if you have a pure sample. And so we're looking for a fairly complete sample that's pretty pure. And so if you're in doubt, if you think it might be actually noise, or if you think it's not actually that convincing, don't be afraid to leave it out.
Okay, so we should err on the side of purity.
Yeah, and of course, every time you mark it in the classification interface, you know, we'll still have all of that information. So in Torp, we should really think of it as an additional filter. Let's get a big list of lens candidates from the classification interface and turn it into a pure list of very good candidates.
Awesome. I like that. Thank you. That's good advice. So then what do you do with that? Now, let's assume, because you guys got, you're what, 650, are we at 700,000 classifications so far? Just in the first day?
700,000, I think.
Well, my analysis just finished. Let me tell you how many.
Oh yes, because I definitely want to hear about how the analysis works, because this is really interesting. It's a fairly new kind of analysis that's being done here, and it's something that we might eventually be able to apply throughout many projects in this universe. So I think a lot of people would be interested in it.
Oh yeah, okay. So we just finished the first 510,000 classifications.
Okay.
So that's 510,000 images.
510,000 classifications of 43,000 images. So that's good because it means we have lots of information about each one. Mm. At the beginning, we wanted to do that because we wanted to understand how we all work. We need to understand how often we all make mistakes and how good we really are at spotting lenses and rejecting images that don't contain lenses. And once we have an understanding of how good we all are, then we can use that understanding to make good decisions about whether to keep a lens candidate or not keep a lens candidate. So we're trying to make decisions based on probability. We're calculating the probability that each image contains a lens and then deciding whether or not to keep it based on that probability.
So what does it look like?
stunned silence from the hangout.
I had myself on mute. I thought I was going to sneeze. So what is the what does it look like? Can you show us plots, even if you just have to hold the screen up? Because you had a movie, or you were like animating how the candidates moved in the kind of probability space, if I remember correctly.
That's a bit too confusing.
Oh, come on!
No, you can wait for the blog post on.
In the know here, Phil and Aprajita are sitting behind Brooke, behind the door.
We could all photobomb each other, and Kyle's in the next office.
Wave each other through those doors, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could probably shout very, very loud. And
Right, okay.
Even if I mute myself. Anyway, I was just, because obviously the next thing we want to know is, first of all, how long will it be before we know how many lenses have been discovered? And because you've got this great analysis, but that can sometimes take time, and that's great because we want to make sure it's careful.
How big is the whole survey?
Up to now, so the first chunk that Phil just mentioned, that's 43,000. That's 1/10 of this particular survey. So there's still a way to go. But, you know, if we see interesting things as we go along, then, you know, that's exactly the point of talk. That's where we're announcing them. That's where they'll be discussed. And that's where we put them here. So, you know, if you see something great and cool and you're excited about, please talk about it. That's the best way to make it prominent.
To Tech Talk and the blog, presumably.
Yeah.
Cool. So there was something that people have been talking about, because this has been in the press for a while, is about brown dwarfs. Because I always think of gravitational lenses as being really strong probes of dark matter, which is really interesting. But what about brown dwarfs?
So brown dwarfs are some of the faintest stars we know about, and we've only ever really seen them in our own galaxy. They're almost failed stars. They kind of flickered a bit, and then they don't really shine very brightly at all.
Because they never got big enough.
And so they're very difficult to see, and especially difficult to see in other galaxies. We can barely see them in our own. So if you imagine a massive galaxy full of stars, and then imagine that massive galaxy also being full of brown dwarfs. Those brown dwarfs are dark, in the sense that they're not shining. And so if you want to be able to study them in other galaxies, you have to have some way of figuring out that they're there, even when you can't see them. And that's what the gravitational lens lets you do. Gravitational lenses let you weigh galaxies, right? When you see, did we have a picture of a lens?
Phil has one up, I think.
Phil has one up, yeah.
Well, actually was going to illustrate a more subtle point that connects with one of my maniacal obsessions. Distortion by gravitational lensing is something we have to start worrying about when we extend dust studies from overlapping galaxies
to
Hubble Zoom. Because then the distances involved give a long enough lever arm that the foreground galaxy may distort the image of the background galaxy. So we have to allow for that possibility in working out how much light is missing.
I think we should call that an opportunity.
This was, I think, the first purely Hubble overlap that I became aware of. It's on the edge of the Sys field in the HDF South.
But that's a very nearby example, right? So in that, actually, even in that, we probably wouldn't see brown dwarfs.
Right. Well, the best place to look for brown dwarfs is in something like a quasar lens, where you can see the effect of a single star passing through the beam, or collectively seeing that.
Is that something that's that different from what we're talking about here, Phil?
It's all related. So okay. Bill was just describing a brown dwarf.
Again, at the risk of indulging a mania, this data set was specifically taken to look for lensing of stars in the background galaxy by the foreground galaxy over a period of a couple of years. because one of the microlensing pundits convinced me that my back of the envelope estimate was an order of magnitude too pessimistic about how long you'd expect to see that.
Okay, so now
there's evidence that we did see star-star lensing events.
Okay, so now
many jargon gongs.
Yeah, we have to jargon gong that like 10 times because there was what? Star-star lensing, microlensing, and I'm going to have to turn to the experts on this one. Can you guys talk about the difference between those?
Sure. That picture's cooler, right? I mean, you know how we ask people at the front page, we say, think of a galaxy behind another galaxy? Well, that's what we imagine most people thinking of. That's a galaxy in front of another galaxy. Mm. But it looks different from the lenses we're after because our background galaxies are way in the background. So they're very small, very distant. And they're the ones that, because of the way the geometry works for a lens, they're the ones that can be distorted in a big way. If you have two galaxies that are very close to each other, like this, very close to each other, then you don't get a very strong lensing effect. But anyway, what we were talking about brown dwarfs.
We were talking about brown dwarfs, which led us to microlensing and, yes, tell us about brown dwarfs, because I always think of it as dark matter, and brown dwarfs are not strictly speaking what we normally talk about.
Right. Brown dwarfs aren't really dark matter with a capital D and a capital M. They're just
matter that's dark.
Yeah, exactly. Matter that doesn't really shine very
dim. Very dim.
Yeah. So there's brown dwarfs are a problem in other galaxies. You can't see them, but you can infer that they're there by measuring their gravitational effects. And one of them is if they happen to pass in front of a distant quasar, they can cause a little blip of magnification as they go past. And that's microlensing. But what we're interested in with the kinds of lenses that we hope to find on and in space warps and have been found already in the CFHC Legacy Survey are massive galaxies that contain, presumably, lots and lots of brown dwarfs that we can't see because they're not shining, but that we'd like to study. And so what we do is we weigh the galaxy with gravitational lensing. We measure the separation between the multiple images that we were looking at a minute ago. And that tells us, roughly speaking, how much total mass there is in the galaxy. So we can weigh a galaxy, and then we can compare that galaxy's weight with what we would predict just by looking at it. So when you look at a galaxy and you know how far away it is, you can guess or estimate from its brightness and from its color how much mass in stars there should be, how much stellar mass there is. And so we can predict stellar mass from the colors and brightnesses, and then we can compare it with the actual stellar mass that we get from modeling the gravitational lensing effect.
So you model it by, you put it into a computer simulation and try to reproduce the configuration that you see, which is a very specific, how hard it was on the wine glasses to get that cross exactly right.
Exactly.
And so you have then a sense of how the matter is distributed.
Yeah.
This is my understanding of it, which tells you, because the dark matter, the actual capital D, capital M, dark matter is distributed differently than the stars and the brown dwarfs.
We think it is.
Probably. Yeah. So the
matter that is dark with little M's and D's should be distributed in the same way as the stars that we see, right?
That's what we assume. So we say, let's suppose that the brown dwarf stars are distributed in the same way as the yellow stars that we see.
Yeah.
And then let's make a little model for the gravitating mass of this galaxy. Let's try and predict the arcs that we see in the gravitational lens system. And when we make that model, we put in some dark matter distributed one way and some stars distributed another way. And we leave the average mass per star as a free parameter. And that's the thing that we really try and estimate. It's in the literature, for some odd historical reason, that parameter is known as the mass-to-light ratio. But it's more helpful to think of it as the average mass per star.
Yeah, it's called that just because we can measure the light, and then you can multiply by the mass divided by the light to get the mass.
Right, exactly.
So astronomers like things that are nice, algebraic, simple things when we can help it.
Yeah, so I can tell you that in what we've seen so far, in the lenses we've seen so far, it looks like these massive galaxies can be up to twice as heavy as they appear from their brightness and color.
So that's a lot of hidden, unseen, stellar-type mass.
Right, that's potentially a lot of brown dwarfs.
Interesting. That's not going to change our estimation of dark matter a lot, is it?
No, because we in our model we estimate the amount of dark matter at the same time.
Okay.
And we still find that we need dark matter with a capital D and a capital M, but we also find that we need extra brown dwarfs.
Cool.
And this is interesting. We didn't expect this.
Yeah, that is an unexpected result. Okay. So I guess the moral of the story is we're doing pretty well with the classification. It's been a very popular launch so far, but we need your help. We still need your help.
Ooh,
yeah, this is my current screenshot. I just refreshed this. I will refresh it again. This has been about a minute and a half between those two. So we're still getting a good number of classifications, but there's still quite a lot of imaging to go through. So
you have a lot of tabs open, Brooke.
I always do.
Yeah.
I always do. So all right, so spacewarps.org. Thank you, everybody. And anybody else have any questions, things they want to discuss?
I wanted to just mention the galaxies on my screen. So since this is the Galaxy Zoo Hangout, many of our users will remember that for a couple of years now, we've also asked you if you've seen lenses in Galaxy Zoo. So it's at the end of the question tree, and you asked if you see...
Look, we have a visitor. Come on in, Chris.
You're on a hangout as well.
Come on. We're all on the same hangout, Chris.
Come on in. No, it's fine. I'm going to go and do some work.
He's not going to come into his own office because that's where I am. He's going to try. Okay, you guys keep talking.
Okay. So anyhow, we've asked you whether you've seen lenses in Galaxy Zoo over the years. And so part of this is as part of the regular classifications. Part of these are, I know we have a very dedicated group of some of our volunteers who have found individual galaxies in their collections and on the forum, which is kind of a pre-version of what Space Warps is hoping to do in the same way. So I've just chosen five examples from the Galaxy Zoo 2 site, so a couple years ago. These are images from Sloan, so they look a bit different than the images that are in Space Warps, but these are ones that your vote selected as being very probable lens candidates. And I thought I would show these to Phil and Aprajita and ask, do you happen to recognize any of these or know if any of them are possible real lenses?
Yeah, I mean, I've done quite a bit on the Galaxy Zoo lens group. Personally, looking at these, I think the most likely one is probably the fourth one along.
The fourth one over, because you can...
But it's a bit hard to tell without the scales. So
it's true. Sorry, and these aren't zoomed in the best way. And one reason is that the fourth one is also of a different color than the lens in Galaxy and the possible lensed one. The color's fairly different.
It's kind of like a little hint of something of similar
color on the other side.
That's kind of the problem with the Sloan images. They're just not good enough quality to do this really well. And what they're actually really good for is finding kind of more complicated lenses where you have a group of galaxies acting together as a lens.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of these are all like single galaxies that are lensing other single galaxies behind them. But if you can imagine you've got a group of these all together, you can actually get a bigger deflection. So your image of the background galaxy is more kind of separated from the group, and that's where the Sloan resolution kind of limits how much you can do with these single galaxies. So not to disappoint everyone, but looking at these five, I wouldn't put my money on them.
I think it's a great example of kind of the need for the dedicated project like Space Warps and the ability to collect some of them in Sloan has been, I think, kind of an important precursor to it.
Oh, definitely.
And several of the people who have volunteered for Galaxy Zoo have been very, very much involved in the planning and execution of Space Warps, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's right. Some of the lens hunters from the forum have been helping us design the zoo and are now active in talk. So they're actually part of the science team at Space Warps. and they'll be continuing to help us throughout the project as it goes along.
Okay, great.
There were a couple of questions that came in on Brooke's blog post just while we were talking about this. One was actually a question about the Zooites who have been particularly active in setting up space warps. And there was a question on, do you need to have spectra of the candidate objects to really confirm that you're dealing with a gravitational lens?
I guess that's a little bit subjective. Personally, I think yes. If you really want a concrete result that all the little multiple images that you see have exactly the same spectra, so the same redshifts, the same properties, then you're kind of almost certain that they're lenses. But coupled with that, you need to have a good model so that you can reproduce that configuration. And you really need the two. Mm. But then having said that, a lot of papers are published without spectroscopic confirmation. So
yeah.
It's a little bit of a mixed bag, I would say.
And part of the reason for that is that spectra are very expensive to get. And so a good strategy is to first find very good lens candidates using just images and then get them out there so that anybody who has a big telescope can investigate them further with spectroscopy.
And there was one final question about whether you could infer brown dwarfs from the wing forward absorption bands or whether those are just good for M dwarfs.
Gong, Bill, gong.
But a quick gong, because we're well over time.
Yeah, and I think maybe we'll save some discussion of brown dwarfs and low mass stars for another hangout.
Unless, Phil, you can answer that very quickly.
No, but Abhijita had something. You were about to say something before Bill.
Oh, no, it was about the galaxies. But it's fine.
Okay.
Well, or just to say that we haven't given up on the original Galaxy Zoo lens sample. Mm. So, you know, there are lenses in there, and actually, you know, a lot of them have been confirmed by other members of the community since they were discovered on the zoo. So, you know, we know that there's good stuff in there, and we're still looking at those resources. So,
yeah.
I wonder if this means that we should be having, that Space Warp should be having its own hangouts, A, and then two, or B, A and then two, that we should... So we should maybe be talking about brown dwarfs on another hangout at some point.
I think so.
Sure.
There's clearly enough information.
Yeah.
So if it's okay, we'll postpone Bill's second question. Yes.
Yes. We should.
That would be excellent because I'm definitely not an expert in brown dwarfs, but I know someone who is. So okay. So thank you everyone for joining, and sorry we went a little bit over time. I hope that I know Abhijita and Karen both have to go somewhere, so I hope that we're not too late. But thanks for joining everyone, and thanks for watching everyone, and see you next time.
This podcast is an audio-only recording of a Galaxy Zoo video hangout. Video and information about gravitational lenses, brown dwarfs, and dark matter with a capital DM is available from blog.galaxyzoo.org, which is also where we live broadcast our hangouts. You can participate in the Galaxy Zoo project by visiting galaxyzoo.org, and try Space Warps at spacewarps.org. If you have questions for the next hangout, visit the blog and leave a comment or tweet us at Galaxy Zoo. Thanks.